everyone. Welcome back to the final episode of Season 2 of Makerspace, a podcast by Christian Education National. It's been a fantastic first half of the year talking to people as we press into topics around the intersections of culture, theology, and pedagogy. This episode is a bit different, as you may have already noticed. A little while ago, I got to speak with Tennille Netter, a Christian singer-songwriter from Western Australia. Tennille has just released her new album, The Way of Love. So this chat is a chance to showcase some of her new music, but also talk about some of her journey from appearing on Australian Idol to making the music she does now. We talk through some of the songs and talk about the role of worship music in the context of the wider genre. Makerspace will be back for a third season in a few weeks, so keep an eye out for that. But until then, here is my chat with Tennille. Well, hello there. I am stoked this conversation has finally happened. We've been thwarted by COVID, and I really inconveniently got married. But now I finally get to sit and chat with Tennille. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Sam. It's great to chat.
It's awesome to chat. And we were just saying before that the first time I actually heard you, Tennille, was at iTech last year. And when I heard you, I was like, oh, no, she's actually really good. And then... And then I went up further to the stage and I was like, oh my gosh, I recognize your husband from New Zealand, which just goes to show how small New Zealand is.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
That was a nice surprise. But thanks for chatting to me. It's great to be able to finally talk to you. The main reason I wanted to get you on is because you have just released an album.
I have, yes, on the 4th of July.
Before Independence Day, which ironically is the day I got married as well. Now your album is called The Way of Love, I've seen that your music's been described as sort of devotional. You know, it's worship music, it's quite reflective, and so it'd be really cool to talk about that. But I think there's a bit of a backstory to you that I didn't really know about until I did a bit of research in the last little while, and your story doesn't begin with your devotional music. It actually, you could say, begins in 2009, where Tennille, who was a, you know, very, very quiet, you described yourself as quite shy train driver in Western Australia, found her way on Australian Idol. What on earth happened? How did this happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I still, yeah, I was very shy. And at that point, I probably wasn't really a committed Christian or a practicing Christian, I should say. But yeah, I auditioned for Idol because my brothers said that I should. And I was petrified. And yeah, I ended up, I made it sort of to the, just before the top 12, I think I, oh, just before the top 24, I think I got sort of cut at the wild card round. So, and yeah, it was sort of going from like never really singing in front of anyone to then being thrust into like, you know, Australian TV was petrifying.
Yeah.
But it was like, I think it was the catalyst for me to go, oh, actually, maybe I can like do music, or maybe I should put more time into music. Yeah. And I guess that sort of started my journey. And after I did that, I actually moved across to Sydney and yeah, started more intentionally pursuing music.
Yeah, what an experience. I mean, that's a rare experience. You know, you go back into the archives and you watch what you went through, and you're singing like Warwick Avenue, and it's like obviously national TV, and you've got Delta Goodrum. So I mean, fascinating. And then you move to Sydney, you start pursuing music, and then what happened in the years in between where you sort of were doing that, and then all of a sudden you're coming out with this Christian music? Seems like a lot of things happened in that time where you kind of recalibrated what you're about.
Yeah, I did. I can't remember like the exact timeline, but I think it was sort of over the course of 4 or 5 years. Like I moved over to Sydney I won a competition called the Telstra Road to Tamworth, which was kind of like an artist development sort of deal. And I released a video and a single, and I sort of went to the States as part of that. I signed a publishing deal with Mushroom Publishing. And then, kind of through that, I ended up signing to Universal slash Island Records in Sydney. And then I recorded an EP with Universal. And then I did sort of like a bit of touring and sort of just, hung out in Sydney music scene, worked with various producers. And I think I did a lot of growing in that time as an artist. It was a really good experience. And I guess at the same time, I was kind of like growing in my faith. So I was like taking a, yeah, more of an interest in like apologetics. And I was reading, like A Reason for God. And I read Christianity, and like I started reading my Bible. And in God's providence, I met some great Christian people, and they were sort of like, yeah, I guess without me even realizing it, like discipling me, but it was definitely kind of slow going. And I sort of got to the point after, yeah, I think it was probably like four, I sort of had a couple of years in Sydney, and then I moved to Melbourne for a few years as well. And then eventually I moved back to Perth. And that was kind of around the time that I was pretty cynical about music, and I was quite burnt out, and I was quite discouraged. The label, I had like written all these songs and worked with all these different people, but they sort of like wouldn't release any of the music that I was making. They were also trying to like push me in a direction, more edgy. I think the term that they used was that I was too vanilla, So I think I kind of like really struggled with identity in that season. I think for me, like because of my upbringing, my parents split up when I was quite young, and then I kind of like found my identity and my worth sort of like in music. But it really was like this roller coaster of emotions, and then it was kind of actually through becoming a Christian, obviously, that changed. So after about 5 years, I moved back to Perth, and I started attending like a little Bible study group on a Friday. And then I kind of was like, oh, I want to come to church. And so I started going back to church, and then I got baptized, and and then I ended up doing an internship at that church, and I went to Bible college the following year. I studied theology, and then and in amongst all that, I met my husband. And I think just out of I had like a big break from music. I left the record label. And then I suppose really out of like my conversion, I just, after having like a big sabbatical from music, I just organically started writing songs that were inspired by my faith and my experience of becoming a Christian and just life through the lens of my faith. And so yeah, the gospel really sort of like reshaped the way that I approach songwriting. And so I guess I started writing like these devotional type songs. And I remember like making my first Christian EP, and I was really nervous and really scared because I hadn't released any music like that before. So yeah, and that was what year would have that? I'm not sure. Maybe that was like 8 or 9 years ago that I released my first sort of Christian project. And then, yeah, it's just kind of grown from there.
It's really, I don't think it's hugely common right now for musicians or artists to have also studied theology. And so that's a really interesting combination you bring. What are some of the things you learned at Bible college that you feel have stayed with you and really informed your songwriting?
Yeah, oh, it was like so immensely helpful. Like I think just for all of life, like I think especially for me not really growing up in church or having like a bit of a scattered experience of church. I think I'm really grateful for like the discipleship that I received as a new Christian. I'm really, really grateful for my time at college because I think it gave me like a foundational understanding of the Bible and how to read the Old Testament, how to, biblical theology, systematic theology, all that stuff. I think it just, it obviously like impacts all of life, like the way that I parent, the way that I am in my marriage, but particularly with my songwriting, I think, because even though like my devotional writing, I think has a bit more freedom to be sort of like ambiguous or abstract because it's not really intended for singing in church, but especially for writing song singing in church, truth becomes a really key component. And I think, we need to be really careful and intentional about the lyrics that we write for church. And so I would say that my time at college has, yeah, been immensely helpful for both the devotional and the congregational songwriting, but I think particularly congregational songwriting. And also just when I'm learning more about Jesus and his word, I grow in my love for him, and then that inspires more songs. And actually, I wanted to go back to college this year, just for that reason, just to be like fed and to then, yeah, be able to have more expression to the songs that I'm writing.
Because I mean, it's really important, isn't it? Worship often can be the main place where people actually get their theology from, and there's a lot of implicit stuff about how I position myself in relation to God and who is God to me that comes through in the way we sing. And so what you do when you write music isn't just giving someone nice things to listen to, but it's actually structuring their theology. So it's a big
Yeah.
responsibility, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you look at some of the old hymn writers, and a lot of them were pastors, Martin Luther. But now I think there's almost like this divide between like a songwriter and a theologian. And I think if you're a songwriter that's not theologically trained, or, because at the end of the day, people say, oh, I'm not a theologian, but we actually all interpret the Bible. We're all theologians to some degree. And so I think it's our responsibility, even just as followers of Jesus, that we learn how to kind of read the Bible. And so I think if you're a songwriter and maybe that's not your strength, that's an area that you could grow in. Or like I actually vet a lot of my songs through pastors. So like my brother's a pastor, I'll often send him a song and say, like, is anything in this, misleading or like misrepresenting God, or, because I care about being reverent and holy and, So I think, yeah, it's definitely really important.
Oh, so interesting. And I've noticed that people that you collaborate with are also really big on that too, even producers that you work with, I'd say that, they're quite theologically intentional as well. Would that be true?
I'd say for the most part, yeah. A couple of the congregational songs that I've written, a guy on the East Coast has produced, and he produces the stuff for like Emu Music, and yeah. So, yeah, it's helpful to be on the same page.
Well, on that, it might be good to listen to some of your new songs. It'd be good to give some time in this to just play some of that. So, I've taken note of three that I would love to have you talk about. And the first one is "Wonderful, Wonderful Lord," and it seems to be quite a different song in amongst the album. It's quite fun. It's a little bit upbeat, and the production is kind of really intricate and clever. So I was wondering if you could chat through this song a little bit. Did it take a little while to put together, or what's the story?
Well, John Guerra is based in Austin in Texas, and he produced the whole album, so I can't take credit for any of the production. John is a genius and he's amazing. And yeah, I loved his production on that track. But that's actually, it's interesting that you say it's a little bit sort of like left field for the album, because it is actually the only song on the album that was written a long time ago. So that song was written maybe 8 years ago. It was one of my actual first devotional songs, one of my first Christian songs that I ever wrote. I wrote it around the time that I wrote Mercy, which was like my first Christian EP, and I had written Mercy, which was based on Psalm 86, and then I wrote Wonderful, Wonderful Lord, based on Psalm 139, when my first son was a baby. So that's how long ago that was written. And it just never, I don't know, we just never ended up recording it on any of the other projects. And then when we were sort of going through the songs for this album, yeah, it just was the right time to so that's how that song came about. But yeah, John, as I said, John produced the record over there. I sort of send him my voice memo demos, like me playing the guitar with the lyrics and the melody and the chords, and then he sort of makes a bed, sends it back, I sing on the track. It's quite the satellite project, so
Well, maybe we'll have a listen to the song, and then maybe afterwards we'll talk about working with John a little bit more.
sure.
Cool. Oh, this is a little snippet of "Wonderful, Wonderful Lord."
You have searched me, O Lord. You know when I sin and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar, before prophesy your thoughts to me, more vast than the grains of the sand in the sea. When I awake, I am still with thee.
So good. Talk to me more about John Guerra, because he's an artist that I've really grown to love over the last couple of years. The lyrics are smart, devastatingly honest sometimes, rooted in the Bible, and just an amazing way with melody. I mean, what is he like to work with and bounce ideas off?
John's amazing. Yeah, as you say, he's like so immensely talented. And John and I actually started working together as a result of COVID, interestingly enough, because so I had released Mercy and John had just released Keeper of Days, which was his, I think, sort of like his first devotional kind of album. And I just messaged him and said how much I love the album. And he was like, oh, I love your EP. And then we sort of like connected via Instagram. And then he was meant to go on tour for Keeper of Days, but because of COVID, he couldn't go on tour. And I was like, do you want to produce an EP for me? And he did. So he produced my EP, What Is My Hope, which was, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. And then since then, we collaborated on a couple of other like Christmas singles and have written together a number of times. And then over the last like year or two, we were working together on the album. It was pretty, because I've got like 3 kids and it's really busy. We were kind of just like, let's just chip away at it. And so that's what we did. And often like I was just tracking vocals in my spare room at night when the kids went to bed, and it wasn't like high pressure. We just took our time with it. And I think it was a really, like, the approach was, I mean, it was the only approach that I could take to making an album in this season of life, because I just can't take like a month in the studio to make an album.
Yeah, totally.
So it really works for me. And I think John and I have like quite a, like an organic sort of creative, like we get each other, and I trust him and I trust his decisions in terms of like production. I think he really understands the music, and the heart behind the music. And so I don't know if this would work with everyone, like if that makes sense. I think it's a unique sort of collaboration, which I'm really thankful for.
Yeah, and you're actually meeting him for the first time in a couple of weeks, aren't you, when you go over to the States for some shows, is that right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah. So we've never met in person. So I'm flying into Dallas, and then I'm opening for him at his Dallas show, and I'll get to give him a hug in real life.
Yeah. Which also happens to be the longest stretch of time you're going to have away from your kids ever. So I imagine that's pretty complicated for you, like internally.
Yes, it is. It's very bittersweet, I think. I think I'll have to keep busy. Otherwise, I'll probably cry.
Oh, it's not easy. Well, maybe off the back of that, we'll play the song The Invitation that John actually sings on and features on. Is there anything you'd like to say about what this song is about, or the story behind putting it together?
Yeah, it was actually the last song written for the album. And it came about because the Gospel Coalition in the States sort of put this idea out there. Like, it was a contest, and it said, what is the gospel, or the gospel is? And so that was like, I guess the task was to write a song that kind of like encapsulated the gospel. And I had been like, thinking about it for quite a while, and wrote The Invitation, and I sent it to John, and I was like, what do you think about putting this on the album? And so, John loved it, and he was like, I'll sing on it and let's send it in. And that's
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, this is The Invitation.
You cannot bring
were enjoying listening to the album so far. What I thought would be great to, I mean, I picked my top three, and these are just my top three. But the other one that I'd love to talk about is as I was listening to the album, the song that kind of stopped me in my tracks, and I was like, oh man, this got me, was actually the title track of the album, The Way of Love. I really loved the song, and I love the way it's put together and the nuance behind the, you know, the obviously your vocals are the main feature of all your music, really. But also there's a lot of depth there into what you're singing about. So, you know, how did you put this one together, and what did you want to kind of protect as the song emerged into its final form?
Yeah, the way of love, it's from, the famous Corinthians 13 passage, which I was just reading and meditating on. And I think, parenting for me has been, well, and for lots of people, can be immensely sanctifying and challenging. And I think in a lot of ways exposes your sin, like your impatience. And I just remembered like reading it and, love is patient, love is kind. And I was like, in seeking to love my kids and love my family, I really need Jesus's help. And so that was, and I think also when I became a Christian, it really redefined love for me. I think I was, like so many people that are not Christians and that are in the world and all the messages that the world sends about what love is, it's so confusing. And I kind of like had to relearn what love was and what it is and how Jesus defines love. And so yeah, I think I was just thinking about all that and reading that passage, and it really was kind of like a prayer of my own heart, really, which a lot of my songs are just my own prayers. And even just that concept, like, if I have not love, I am nothing. If I have not love, I gain nothing, for the way of love never ends. It's like if we don't do things in love, it doesn't mean anything, and but then that love gives so much meaning to what we do. And so it's kind of like liberating at the same time. And I think, so that's, it's a special song to me. Makes me like teary a bit to sing it, actually.
Yeah, it has the same effect on the listener, I think. Well, here's The Way of Love, the title track.
Help this heart of mine, be patient and be kind, not self-seeking, record keeping, evil don't delight. Help this heart of mine, not envy nor despise, rejoice in truth, shun anger, choose the gentle words of life.
Very cool. Okay, well, you know, this technically is a Christian education podcast, technically. And I'm very aware that I deviate from this, but I guess, you know, your kids are attending a Christian school, CN school, and you've had mixed experiences with the arts. You've had probably a very commercialized experience, and then you've sort of found your own way to sort of understand your own identity and express that through art. I would say in the Western Protestant Church, I feel like we're quite confused about the place of art. You know, is it expression? Are we there to do something more than that? And I just wondered if you've got any thoughts about, you know, what would you like your kids to grow up being taught, understanding about the place of art and what it can do for us and how to meet God through it. Like what would be your hopes for that for kids at a Christian school?
Yeah, I would love to see the arts be more embraced at Christian schools for the glory of God. Like, I think the secular world has like this claim on art, but it hasn't always been that way. You know, like in centuries gone, it was a lot of Christian art was, you know, in the forefront. And I think in some ways, yeah, it would be great. I feel like particularly in music now, there's like a resurgence or like a revival of sorts in like Christian art and music and like across all genres, like and it's not bound by, yeah, by genres or geography or, yeah, I think having different expressions of faith through different cultures, through art and music is so important because, you know, I think preaching is wonderful and teaching, like I've been to Bible college and those things are important, but I think music particularly engages our hearts and our minds and our affections in a unique way and a powerful way that just maybe spoken preaching doesn't, you know. And I think it's important that we engage all our faculties and our soul, you know. People remember songs, like you said before, Sam, like people remember songs, not necessarily sermons. And music is such a powerful way. And even just to broaden what we sing about, like the Psalms present like lament, confession. They're like intense with emotions. And I feel like as particularly in the worship scene or congregational music scene, like there's a lack of songs that really kind of explore that range of like human emotion in the Psalms. And then I feel like if we're not producing that music that kind of like grapples with like the human condition and things, mysteries of God or like whatever, then where are people going to go and look for that, you know? Like, and so yeah, I think I hope that my kids grow up with an appreciation of music and art and a desire to create art that, yeah, speaks something of the gospel or, and I think in schools and in churches to see it valued more, you know, and to see it as a viable ministry. Like I'm amazed at how many churches just think that music is like superfluous and, you know, why should we care about music and why do we need people that are gifted at music, and then even to the point where they're like discouraged or their gifts aren't encouraged. Like, I don't know whether it's like, oh, you know, an overreaction to like performance or something, you know. But yeah, when you do that, you really limit something that could be really valuable and life-giving.
Well, just on that, who, if you're probably a bit more plugged into it than the average person, who have you listened to recently, where it's really kind of taken you there, where you're like, wow, this has opened something up that I know is true at a new depth. Maybe you felt really moved by it. Is there an album or an artist or a song that you've experienced in the last little while?
Yeah, I think well, John Guerra's just released his Jesus album. So I feel like I'm just talking about John Guerra, but he has just released a new album. And I think for me, another artist I really appreciate is John Van Dusen. He released a song recently called Jesus of Nazareth. And there's a line in it that says, even if I could, I'd never exchange your love. Like I'd never go back, even if I could. And often, even just for myself, like I think about my life before I knew Jesus, and yeah, I would never go back, you know. And so, like I remember when I listened to that song, I found it really touching. And likewise with John's album, like I think the opening track on that Jesus album, Love, oh, was it Love Was in the Beginning? In the Beginning, I think it's called. It's just the most beautiful, like I can listen to that song like 100 times and it's just incredible, and it just makes me, I feel like I'm drawn so much into yeah, God's love. And you know, even though it's not like an explicit sermon on God's love, but it's just the music and the lyrics and the melody, and it just, you know, yeah, it's amazing. So there's, I mean, yeah, and I love like Josh Gorel's When I First Became a Christian, Love, War, and the Sea in Between. That album was like mind-blowing for me because I'd come out of secular music and I heard this music that was like so honest and interesting musically, you know. And I was like, oh, like it really inspired me to write to write songs about Jesus and my faith and like sort of
Totally.
like that devotional music.
I had the same sort of sense as you. I think, Larry Norman had that song back in the 60s of Why Does the Devil Have All the Good Music? And I kind of probably felt pretty similar to that, right? But I remember as a 17-year-old seeing Switchfoot for the first time and just being like, oh my gosh, like you can make good music. And that made me pick up the guitar for like 15 years. So I totally get what you mean. Cool.
Really, we should have the most like interesting and exciting and beautiful and colorful, like why does everyone else get like this, freedom
Well,
to
if we are indwelt by the ultimate creative force of the universe, then you're absolutely right. Like there is no limitation to what we can do, and so I often wonder, is it the genre that's limiting us in our minds? What do you think?
Yeah, I think like CCM, so like Christian contemporary music, or like, particularly our like congregational sort of worship, there's certain, I guess, I don't want to say brands, but like Hillsong, Bethel, there's certain groups that kind of like dominate that sphere. But I think with streaming now and with social media and everything, like I said, I've definitely noticed like a massive, even in the sort of like 8 to 10 years that I've been doing kind of like indie Christian music, there's been a huge resurgence of like indie Christian artists across all genres, and I love it, and it's so exciting. And for what the most part that I've seen, like it's a really awesome community. Like people are generally not competitive, like they're encouraging of each other. And I think it's because the goal is actually to like show something of Christ through what we do, and it's not actually about like self. Like elevating yourself for the sake of elevating yourself. I'm not saying there's none of that, but I'm saying like compared to like the secular world where it's all about, asserting yourself, it has been like a really different experience. And it's really exciting. And when you think like, Ephesians says, speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. Colossians, teach and admonish each other through all psalms, hymns, and songs of the Spirit. And so, and we see songs all through scripture, the psalms. Every time there's like a great act of salvation, there's a song. So it's like music is appropriate. God's given us music as a gift. God's given us songwriters as has gifted them to, So I think if yeah, I'm not sure why it takes so much convincing sometimes.
I think there's a few commitments that we maybe haven't thought about that we have, but you're absolutely right. Cool. Well, it's so nice to have spoken to you and to be able to get into your album a little bit. I hope you have a great time in America.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
and I hope the separation anxiety from the children isn't too bad. And it's just hope that we get to bump into you at some point, and you get to do a little bit of traveling around Australia as well as America.
That would be amazing. Thank you for having me, Sam. I really appreciate it.
It's been great. Thanks heaps for your time, and we'll chat soon.
See ya.
Yeah. Thanks for joining. If you're keen to keep learning and accessing more of CEN's resources, why not subscribe to the Christian Teachers Journal, a publication of the National Institute for Christian Education, the postgraduate arm of CEN. Go to CEN's website, which is in the show notes, and under publications, you can take out an annual subscription to CTJ and receive your own copy of the 4 editions. From time to time, you might even find some writing from our podcast guests. See you next time. Lord, I cling to you.